Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And questions abound. I have so many questions and emails that we get at thepositivemind.com. But what most people are curious about is love itself, of course. But is it love that they're interested in, or is it relationships? Is it this thing about finding the mate, finding the way to do it, being safer in the world? Well, so many people don't know. How do you do it? How do you go out there if you're a single person to meet new people? What's available? How do you tell what's safe, what's not safe? Does that matter? Safety matter? What if you've been through life once around, been a woman who's had children, and you decide, all right, I'm going to go out there again, you know, no mate now, or a man with the same thing? What do you have to deal with? What do you have to face? I want to talk about that today. The challenges, well, the opportunities of being single. And in this, I needed some help, so I called in a relationship coach, Iris Cohn, Iris First, who I've known for a long time. Iris is a specialist in an area called the Enneagram, which is a system of knowledge that helps me understand people better. Iris, welcome back to the station.
Thank you, Armand. Great to be here.
Iris, here's my question. It's such an enormous amount of information to teach people about people. Now, me, it's simple. If I meet somebody for the first time, I could generally see who they are, what they're like. I could understand, you know, where they're coming from. And I feel fine with people. I'm not trying to figure them out because this is my business. This is what I do. And I'm sure it's the same for you. But most of our audience, most of the people who listen, scratch their heads. Scratch their heads. When they try to figure out who people are. So the question is there some way of us breaking it down for people so that they could understand a little better where a person is coming from when they meet them for the first time? And maybe you should understand yourself first and where you're coming from when you meet somebody for the first time. So one of the ways that we've studied this is by talking about your different ways of being. What's a good way of studying this?
Well, Armand, I happen to have a real love and affinity for the Enneagram, and I find that it actually hones into what really makes people tick. And it is a complex system, so we'll try to make it as simple as possible today.
Well, you know, I want people to know that you speak on this so much. You talk about this so much, and you're a very energetic person who I've seen do presentations, and you use your hands and gestures and blackboards and things. But since we can't do that on the air, I'm going to try to tell people, or actually, if you don't mind, I'll try to translate.
Armand, feel free to do that. Yes, I do. I'm used to talking in front of live audiences. I do use my hands. I do use gestures. So feel free to redirect me at any time. No problem.
Okay, great. Okay, let's talk about these three types. What are these types called?
So there is the self-preservation.
What is a group called?
It's called the
instinctual types.
Okay, these are the instinctual variants. The Enneagram, the nine types are, each type has an instinctual variant. We have all of them.
Each of us have some instinctual variant. We're going to talk about what these instincts are. There are three instincts.
Yes, there is the self-preservation type. There is the intimacy type. And there is also the social or tribal type.
Now, why this is important is it's important when we say type, we're talking about us. We are all three types, right?
That is accurate.
We are both instinctual. We are the intimacy type. We are the self-preservation type. And we're social type. And we're going to talk about a definition of all these three things. What's important about that is if you understand you and you try to grasp what it's like the person you're talking to, even in a casual conversation today, if you're a cab driver, listen to the people in your cab. And you'll be able to say to yourself, what's this person talking about? What do they care the most about? We're saying that there's some preference for one of these three things in life. Self-preservation, intimacy, or social. So you talk about the three and what they mean, Iris.
Okay. So the first thing that I want to say is, like you said before, we have all of the types in us, but one of them is really the dominant one, and one is the one that is probably the least developed, usually in human beings. So the self-preservation type is the type that is most preoccupied with safety.
Instead of type, let's say person.
Okay, the self-preservation The self-preservation person is the type of person that is most preoccupied with safety, security, comfort, home, paying the bills, whatever the physical well-being and health, even sexually when they are...
We'll get to that in a second. Self-preservation people are people who care mostly about comfort and finding some safety in their life. Self-preservation, right? How do I stay alive? How do I get through? What's it like for me, even if I'm getting in the cab? Do I have a bottle of water in case I run out of water?
Exactly.
Might I eat in the cab? You know, might I, am I thinking about the safety? Do I put on my seatbelt, you know? Do I ask about the seatbelt? Do I check the driver's name? A self-preservation person goes through life curious about their safety, wondering not only their safety, but their comfort. It's feeding an instinctual need to be at rest, not to be nervous, not to be threatened.
Yes, that's accurate, Armand.
Okay, that's a self-preservation type. Are you a self-preservation type? Is your primary goal in life to just get through? A lot of women I know who get past relationship stuff, and then they get into their adult years, you know, in 50s and so on and so forth. The first concern of theirs is, how am I going to make it? How am I going to get through? How do I learn about the banking? How do I learn about, you know, how do I pay the bills? How do I do that now that I had somebody else doing it for me? You know, so a lot of people will kick in this self-preservation instinct, even though it may have laid dormant. How many of you out there are wondering how you're going to survive? We never worried about it before. Well, the self-preservation, when they get into a relationship, somehow that self-preservation is paramount. Now, how would that manifest?
Well, if you are a self-preservation person, you will look for another person who is good with the bills, that will not live above their means, that creates order in the house. And the way a self-preservation person shows love to their partner is they'll take care of their self-preservation needs. Like, they may cover them with a blanket. They may make sure, like, you may get a present from your boyfriend, a bunch of light bulbs that were on sale. Things that will make you safe and create workability in your life. Sometimes it doesn't seem to be as romantic, but that is a way of them showing love and caring.
You mean if somebody understands that you are a self-preservation person, they could feed it, even if they're not a self-preservation type, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, very interesting about the self-preservation type. Well, let's talk about the other two types first, then we'll come back to the sexuality of the self-preservation type, because that's really interesting. The second type of person that we talk about in these instinctual variants is the social type. What is a social type of person primarily concerned with?
The social type The social type of person is concerned with their sense of belonging, being part of a group, being part of communities. I also call them tribal. They are usually the type that are part of fundraisers. They need a sense of belonging. They need to feel safe by being a part of something.
Being safe by being part of something. That's what really counts, right? As Sister Sledge would say, we are family. We are family, you know, belonging to something, such an important thing. Now, some people don't care. Some people walk in and they say, look, I'm an individual and those are a bunch of individuals. Whether they like me or not, I don't care. I'm going to come in here and get what I want. I'm going to sit where I feel comfortable. I'm going to feed my needs. I'll get some food. I'll get a drink. I don't need to be accepted. That's not a social type. That's, in fact, the opposite of a social type, right?
Yes. The social type really is, if they walk into a party, for example, they will walk in and they will scan the room to see what groups, not what single person, but what groups they want to become a part of. It's like a magnet. They're just drawn to it.
And if that same person were a self-preservation type and they walked into it, well, we're going to have to get to that because that involves a sexual thing. Let's talk about the intimacy type.
Okay.
Intimacy type is a person who is what?
The intimacy type is a person who is an intensity junkie, urging to merge. They walk into a party, they look around a room, and they're scanning the room. Who is going to juice me? Who is going to make me feel alive? And it's almost like an instinctive pull, like they get drawn to a person.
They will look for a source of energy. You know, so what it sounds like is the instinctual types, the intimacy types are all depressed because they're always searching, but that's not always true. The intimacy type is looking for a bonding. It's looking for a mate. It's looking for a partner. It's looking for somebody to do what with? To get juiced with? To feel sexual with?
Yes, to get juiced with, to feel sexual with, and also to merge, to feel alive. I mean, that's the best way I could say it.
Well, you've all had that experience. You meet somebody for the first time, and you feel this incredible merging, and the two of you want to use your common names. I remember Sally and Aaron, who used to call themselves Saren. You know, they would do, like, we'll just put everything together, you know. We'll have our cats meet, you know what I mean? So a social, an intimacy type of person, which we used to be called a sexual type of person, but it gets too confusing when you do that. The intimacy kind of person is a person who is looking for a relationship. In effect, they want a meeting. They want a meeting, but they want a meeting with one person usually. And it's like, come on, let me find somebody to take home, somebody to be with. But it's not just purely libido that's driving them. It's bonding that's driving them. It's oxytocin that's driving them. It's like, let me put my arms around somebody and hold on to them, right?
Yes and no. Yes, they're looking to merge, but they're not a sexual type is not necessarily looking only for the one, even though on some level, I guess we're all looking for a mate. The sexual person is looking for someone that's going to juice them. If that particular person that they bond with is going to continuously provide juice for them, that feeling of being alive, that connection, that merging, then they'll probably stay with that person. If that person does not show up that way and they do not have an understanding of the differences of these instinctual variants, then they may kick the person to the curb because they're no longer getting the juice, which is their drug of choice.
Well, it's their drug of choice. Sexuality may be the drug of choice of some instinctual types, but then we have to go back for intimacy types. But then we have to go back to the self-preservation type. There are certain people who are instinctual types, who are self-preservation types, and their self-preservation is about feeding their needs. They get gut feeling. I got to eat. I'm going to eat, right? And they're almost driven by a lizard brain. You know, they have this part of the brain says, find shelter, get safety, find a mate, and procreate. The urge with the sexuality of a self-preservation type is, I got to have sex. I must have sex. There's a biological imperative commanding sexuality. In fact, when you hear about sexual addicts, sex addicts, you're usually hearing about self-preservation sexual types. And these self-preservation, they don't know it. They go from person to person having sex, looking for more sex, sex again. You know, it's like it's continuously on their mind. And what is it about? Everybody says, oh, you're such an intimacy person. No, it's the opposite. One of the things we learned recently, Iris, that I thought you'd find fascinating is in studying some of the neuroscience and biological sciences, we found that an interesting thing happens to some men after orgasm. After orgasm, you know, whereas many people have oxytocin, which is a hormone that makes you bond with somebody else, men very often have prolactin. Now, prolactin, what it does is it makes you feel an aversion to the other person. So now, with a lot of these types, what we found is the sexual self-preservation types, they have sex and they must move away. They either go to sleep, they want to eat pizza, they want to go somewhere, find somebody else. This is not because they're nasty boys. This is not because they're womanizers, but of course they are womanizers. Just as there are manizers who do the same thing, it is because they are driven by their lizard brain. They are driven by a primitive instinct that's unfettered, untouched, and it says, if you do this, if you have sex, you will feel relief. And that's what it's about. It's about feeling, I did good somehow. And it may be just momentary relief because, you know, young boys who are these type masturbate all day long. They get that moment of relief and they go on to the next time and the next time and the next time. So when you see out there people who are highly sexed, who seem to be driven by sex alone, you could look and you could say to yourself, this person is at the mercy of their hormones. They're at the mercy of their commands. And even though this person may have a very strong drive and be very attractive to some people, you know, let's say you're somebody who doesn't feel very attractive and you're feeling doubts about yourself and you run into somebody who's a strong self-preservation, sexually oriented type, well, they're going to want to gobble you up because it makes them feel relief, not makes them feel love or bonded.
So that is absolutely accurate. The one thing that I wanted to address, Armand, is that the way that you are saying it, it's not that these types are not looking for partners also. They are looking for partners. It's just that what drives them, the libidinal energy that drives them is different than the other types. So it's the release, and that is what's dominant.
But what if the partner could be somebody who gives me that release all the time? What if the partner's somebody who I could have sex with 10 times a day? What a great partner is what people think with this type. Oh, what a fabulous thing. Now I have a partner who will give me this relief all the time. But it's not like I feel the connection all the time. That person gives me the relief all the time. It's really an interesting thing, computers. So many women talk about how men go to their computers after having sex. It's like they go to their computers after sex, and then they go back for more sex, and they go to their computers, and they go back for more sex. And this is ideally what they want. You know, give me sex and a computer, and that's all. I need to be happy. So that's in one type. There we are in that one self-preservation type. And when you spot it, when you see it, how can you tell? How can you tell if you're a woman who's looking at a man coming towards you? How can you tell if he's a social type or a self-preservation type?
a social type, a self-preservation, or a sexual type?
No, let's just...
intimate type?
No, let's just start with the two, because everybody thinks when you're meeting people for the first time that you want an intimacy type. You're all assuming you want relationships, right? So you all think you're looking and finding, oh, I want somebody who wants a relationship too. So people will act as if they want relationship. People will act as if intimacy is what counts. Oh, all I want to do is meet somebody who I could love for the rest of my life. But there are other two commands, social and self-preservation, may dominate. How could you tell when somebody is a social type?
Well, you could certainly hear some of the things that they'll talk about. So let's say you're meeting somebody for the first time on a blind date, first date, and you'll hear that they usually do things with different communities, they're part of groups, they're part of athletic camaraderies, and they will be interested in you because, of course, when you're mating, you do go into your intimacy instinct.
Social type. How do you find if somebody is a social type?
Well,
they're talking about what they belong to, what they see, how they perceive the world. They're talking about needing to belong, being a part of things. That's how you determine their social tendency.
And also another clue may be you're sitting there, you're having a conversation with them, and they're having side conversations with everybody else trying to include them in it.
Ah, so in other words, you may be sitting at a restaurant, and then all of a sudden you're turning around to somebody and talking to them. Isn't that because you're bored?
Not necessarily. It's also,
it could be that you need that as part of what you do.
As that sense of belonging, which is where they get their value and self-worth from, and their safety.
So when you go to the instinctual type, everybody is hoping the other person's going to be an intimacy type. You keep hoping, oh, I want this person, really wants love. Now, when you look on the internet and you look at, you know, dating services, everybody keeps talking about wanting long-term relationships. Everybody keeps saying, I'm an intimacy type. You know, that's what I want and that's what I need. But it's rarely true, isn't it?
Yes, it is rarely true. Even though social types would like to be around a lot of people, they avoid intimacy.
One of the disadvantages, by the way, that you told me, which I thought was cute, and I hope people can follow our abstract way of doing things, Iris brought me some very important information. She said, you know, one of the ways that internet dating serves people is to keep them in complete isolation and validate their isolation. Because what a lot of people do is they put up a picture of themselves, and then they go on to carry on long email relationships with people, but never have to show up. They never have to meet them.
Right. So they never have to risk rejection. They never have to risk not being seen for the way they would like to personify themselves.
This is Iris First, who is a relationship coach and a teacher of the Enneagram, who's with us in the studio, has worked with us for a number of years. Iris, so when meeting people, you got to determine first your own type. And determining your own type is you got to ask yourself some questions. Why don't we go over the questions that you would ask yourself around your three different types?
Okay. So first of all, Armand, you would ask yourself, what is the thing when I go out every day in life? Am I one of those people that always makes sure I have my ducks lined up? Do I make sure if it's raining, bring an umbrella, or am I one of those people that are always caught without an umbrella? If you're one of those people that always have your snacks and your food and all your ducks lined up, chances are that you are a dominant self-preservation type. When you're planning your day, you could ask yourself the question, do I usually think of what group activities do I have planned? Like, look at your schedule.
Okay, now wait, you're switching over to the social type now.
I am.
So give me more characteristics on the self-preservation type. I know it's not just having an umbrella. What else is it?
No, it's not just having an umbrella.
Let's go
there.
It's
also making sure that your bills are paid, making sure that your home is safe, making sure that your comforts and your your home is in working, has workability, is in working condition. You don't leave anything unturned when it comes to that.
And are you dressing in a certain way? If you're a self-preservation type, are you dressed for...
Absolutely. Self-preservation types, always remember to, like I said, bring an umbrella, always have a sweater if it's in, just in case it's cold. They cover their bases. They cover their basic need bases.
They like sneakers, I'll bet.
They certainly like, yes.
We bet they like sneakers. I could run away on these. It's hard running away on the other ones. Okay, that's the self-preservation type. Now the social type, which you were about to describe.
So the social type, if you're questioning if you're a social type, you may ask yourself, okay, let me see my schedule. Let me see my schedule for the week. Do I have any group activities? Do I have any group activities lined up as a way of getting a sense of belonging, desire to be safe, a way of connecting, a way of being comfortable?
Am I going to meet with my friend, you mean?
It's not
just... Am I going to meet with friends? What are the people at
work... It's not necessarily...
Well, and it's also a concern. What do the people at work think of me? You know, where do I fit in at work? You know, even your clothing are going to be not too outstanding because you're going to want to be part of people, right?
Right. Well, you're not necessarily okay. With that. But a good point you just made with at work, social types are more team players. They're less of the people that have to do things in their on their own.
Right. Okay. And the last is the intimacy type. Tell me about that type.
Okay. So if you're questioning or you'd like to know if you're an intimacy type, you're going to look at your schedule. You'll wake up in the morning and you'll say, okay, what the first thoughts that'll come into your mind is what's going to give me my excitement today. There's something to always look forward to. There's something to that when you think of getting together with friends, because all the types get together with friends, but let's say you're going to get together with friends, the people you'll be drawn to are the people that you connect and merge with the most. So, you know, all of the types have to go to work and function.
But the intimacy type is looking more for one-for-one relationships as opposed to the social type, which is looking for the group relationship.
I would say that's
right. The intimacy type is looking more for one-to-one contacts, people that feel really good. You might have found it with yourself if you go to work, you know, and you usually like people at work, but then you have a friend at work who's not coming in that day, and you feel like you don't want to go to work that day because it feels very different because you have this kind of bond. This is Armand DeMille with Iris First. We're talking about relationships and we're talking about types of people that you could understand and people who are understanding yourself as one as well. We're going to be taking a short break, and when we come back, we're going to continue with this and talk more about specific types of people. If you want to send me an email between now and then, you can at armand@thepositivemind.com. I may be reading it on the air right now. armand@thepositivemind.com. And I also want to read your responses, especially from people who feel that they're single out there and fighting with the single world and trying to deal with it, because I want to learn more about this. We will be back with you in just a couple of minutes, I think. Hold on just a second. And remember, next week we will not be with you on Tuesday and Wednesday, but we will be with you on Thursday for a two-hour special in which I'm going to bring you such a treat. Be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
Hello. You're invited to tune into the WBAI Summer Fundraising Drive, starting Monday, August 3rd, going through Saturday, August 15th. There are three ways you can help WBAI in its financial recovery. First, tune in, enjoy the programs, and make a donation based on those programs. Second, come to the station at 120 Wall Street and volunteer to answer the pledge line. And third, go to WBAI.org and make a donation now, giving us a head start in making our goal of $450,000. This may sound like a lot, but if we each do our part, we can accomplish this goal and much, much more. Please support WBAI and help us make this station, your station, strong and healthy. Call 212-209-2826 and register to answer the phones. That's 212-209-2826. Tune in and support our summer fundraising drive, August 3rd through 15th. And thank you so much for all you've done to support WBAI Radio. 99.5 FM, WBAI.org.
It's yours.
I'll light the fire. Is the other type. Here's the type who wants safety and the dream of that safe, warm, fuzzy place.
Staring at the fire for hours and hours while I listen to you play your love songs.
A very, very, very fine house with two cats in the yard. Life used to be so hard. Now everything is easy 'cause of you.
Iris first. Hey, Iris, you know, here comes this other thing that everybody was talking about. And, I want to talk about the two personality, right, specifically. Because so many people talk about wanting to give, that it just seems like they want to be able to give and they want to find somebody who can receive. Now, I know the downside of it. The downside of having to give is that when you don't get, you get very upset. But with all of that logic, you know, with all of that sense, let's give some homage to the givers in the world, you know, the people who do give. Instead of saying that, you know, well, it's just pathology to need to give so much. Let's look at the good news.
While you place the flowers in the vase that you bought today.
Is it always crazy to be a giving person? You know, it's a question. I've known men who have spent so much time taking care of their mates, and then they take care of their children, and then the children leave home, and they don't know what to do with themselves. Then they break up with their wives, and they don't know what to do with themselves. They're so used to taking care of. That tendency to tend, you know, to want to give to people. I mean, Jesus, isn't that everybody's dream to find somebody who wants to give to you? You say, yuck. Iris, what about it? Let's talk about the givers.
So giving is a beautiful virtue. The need to nurture, to take care of is one of the most beautiful things in life, as long as it's done in a clean way. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. When someone is giving unconditionally, when they're giving without the need to get something back in return, it's beautiful.
Well, wait. Forget it. there is no such thing as giving without getting something in return, because even if it's the satisfaction you have inside that you gave, I know people who donate money, and they walk around all day long saying, you know, I really feel proud because I gave money to this cause. And even though you're always going to get something from it if you give.
Right, but you may not have an attachment to what you get out of it. So some
people, reciprocity may not be important to you.
Right. That's when I said to you earlier, ew, it's like about that type that's the over giver. What I was saying is when they give, and they give with something attached to it, they give with an expectation to get back in return, even though they don't verbally say it.
But I'm going to say again to you, I still respect those types, because I think it's the only type of giver there really is. Even though we could say, now it could be levels of what you expect back. I give to you, therefore you have to give to me. I give you presents, you have to give me sex. I give you sex, you have to give me presents. That's crazy stuff. That could get crazy, but usually you're expecting at least the gratitude, the appreciation when you give to somebody, and I don't think that's crazy to expect.
Well, I'm not going to put...
Unless the person doesn't want it, then it gets crazy. You know, if you're giving to somebody who doesn't want to be given to, that becomes crazy.
Well, that's one of the problems with this type, is that they think they intuitively know what you want, and one of the underlying mechanisms that's driving them is their need to be needed.
Do they intuitively know what you need?
Sometimes, and sometimes they're wrong.
So a person could walk into a party who's a giver, right? And let's call them marvelous givers, right? Who's a marvelous giver. And because I've done too many shows on pathological giving, I'm trying to clean up my act. But let's say there's somebody who's a real wonderful person. They want to give to people, and they come out and they go to a party. What do they look for? They look for who has a need. Is that right?
Yes. They look at who has a need. How are they going to be able to be of service as a way of being liked, being loved? These types don't believe that they will be loved for themselves alone, so they need to do. They need to caretake. They need
okay,
to people
please. You're back into pathologizing them.
Wait, let me. I was
okay,
going to say the other
you're
side.
You're saying it. They don't believe. Maybe they do believe.
Okay, I'm going to say the other side of it. So when this type really, but there's also the other part of it that's their just generosity of heart. There's that real beauty of them. So it's really about, for this particular type, the type two, the helper, the caretaker, is to learn how to be true to themselves and ask themselves, am I giving without expecting something in return? It's not even bad or, you know, something wrong with expecting something in return, but be honest about it.
Okay, so I think the real question here, Iris, since it's so nice to disagree with somebody and to agree with you at the same time, it's not that you don't want something back in return, because getting something back could be, I satisfy you. You know, I made love to you, and I didn't care if I had any achievement of any orgasm or anything like that, but I satisfied you, and that made me happy. It's not getting much out of it. It's what you could get out of it is what you're trying to define. Now, if you're thinking to yourself, by giving to you, and getting your gratitude and making you happy, therefore you will love me, that's the kind of thing that's difficult to get. It's difficult to get from somebody something that is not like direct feedback, because what if you go and you find somebody who's incapable of loving? Somebody who's private. Somebody who's a self-preservation type who doesn't come out for anyone, you know what I mean? And you go and you say, I'm going to make them happy. And maybe you could make them happy, but it doesn't mean they're going to open their house and say, you know, come on into my cave. I'm now going to welcome you here. So I think it's okay to expect something in return, gratitude, appreciation, but not to expect that person to feed this other part of you, you know, that this person is going to be so grateful that they're going to change. They're going to be different. I notice a lot of people who are givers may wind up with people who are in addiction. You know, like if the person's a drug addict or an alcohol addict, very often they attract the giver because the giver believes that they could take care of this person and make them feel better. And they can for a while, but rarely are they stronger than the addiction itself. That's where I think the difficulties come in. So I hope the whole world were givers. You know, I wish everybody would want to give to each other in such an enormous way. That's what I like about WBAI. You know, even though you may ask for a premium at WBAI, you're never going to get it. No, you know, you get it. You get it eventually. But the real reason that you donate to the station is because you're giving to something that you love. You're giving to an entity, you know, that you love. So, the givers. The downside of the givers, we kind of all understand. You give too much, you give too much, you give too much. Eventually, you get hurt.
But and resentful.
And
resentful.
And you get resentful. And there's no, they say there is no wrath greater than a woman scorned. There's no wrath greater than a giver scorned. You know, when a giver gets scorned, oof, it's kind of mean stuff. You get very, very angry. And you can become angry in a kind of way that people don't expect.
Yeah, they become the punisher.
Yeah.
And because they are so in tune, many of them, they know how to really hurt you when they're hurt. They know how to make you feel unloved. Usually where their basic fear is not feeling love for themselves alone. They will project that onto you.
Wow. So be careful. You know, that deer, that one that looks like they're so easy and they're so giving, when they get mad at you, they could rip your heart apart because they know exactly where you're vulnerable. They know your spots. I was speaking to someone who said she always likes dominant men. She said she prefers a dominant man because she always sees their weak spots. You know, because they make themselves feel so big, so big, so big, and she could see their weak spots. So that's one of the type in relationships. Now that's a type that is looking for what? They're not usually looking for self-preservation, are they? The twos?
They can be a self-preservation too, but usually a two is looking to be admired and valued for a sense of value.
It's the intimacy. Mm-hmm. The intimacy becomes the dominant instinctual need, you think?
The intimacy twos are like a double whammy of that, but yes, the two in itself is a very...
A two with an instinct of intimacy, you say, is a double whammy. You mean you're getting everything. You get their need and their love, and you get all of it, right?
You get the attunement, but you also get the suffocation and the lack of boundaries.
Whose boundaries?
Respect of the other person's boundaries. And actually of their own also. They really do not know how to define and defend their own boundaries, which then leads to resentment.
So a giver, but if a giver has got their head screwed on right and they really kind of own themselves after a period of time and listen to the positive mind for a number of years, they don't necessarily have to get in trouble.
Oh, they're beautiful.
Exactly.
They're beautiful.
Okay. A more difficult one is what they call the romantic. Right? The romantic type of person, which is another one of the Enneagram types. Is there a lot of, could you break down the three different self-preservation romantic, instinctual romantic, and the social romantic? Like an oxymoron.
I don't know, but I'll try.
is social romantic an oxymoron? Because a romantic, the characteristics of a romantic is they're unique. They feel different. They feel separate. Tell me more.
So the romantic, what actually is operating at the behind the scenes is that they are really deep, but they are very significant. So what I mean by that is they're always looking for a way to validate that they're special. So, and they are deep, and they do have amazing gifts, but as a sexual romantic, they will be a withdrawn type, and they are urged to merge. When you
sexual
are,
romantic, you mean
intimacy romantic, mm-hmm. and the one with the dominant intimacy variant. They will, the urge to merge and the depth of where they want to fuse with you is at your core. And downside of this type is amazing. And then the downside is that they're very hypersensitive and they get wounded very easily. But this is true for whether you're a dominant intimacy for the romantic, a dominant social romantic, or a dominant self-preservation romantic.
Romantics get hurt easily.
Yes.
Right? Very easily wounded.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of pain waiting there, just waiting to be felt.
Right. And they actually have an addiction to pain and suffering. And the reason that they have an addiction to pain and suffering is because they feel like that's a way that they can individuate. That's a way that they could be different. That's the way they could find their significance.
I'll say that again.
Okay.
I'm going to translate this.
Okay.
Go ahead.
This particular type, people who have this type as a partner or have it as a child, let's say, it's very difficult for the parent because it seems like no matter what you do, the child goes into a place of suffering.
So a place of suffering is New Jersey. No. Mm-hmm. We always kid about that. A place of suffering meaning that no matter what you do with the child is going to wind up in some kind of grief, right?
Yes.
And that's really bringing up a child. A child could be a romantic type and that everything you do for them is wrong. Is that the way it really seems?
It seems to them, not to you, but to them, it seems like everything you do is wrong.
Are either of your kids one of those types?
No, they are not.
Thank God. Because it would make you feel like, you know, it's your fault all the time.
It could make you feel like it's your fault or...
What am I going to do to make them happy?
Right. And as a parent, that's what you generally wired to make your kids happy. So it's an extra challenge, I would say that.
And men who fall in love with romantic types, they are spending all their time, what am I going to do to make her happy? What am I going to do to make her happy? When asked the question why men leave relationships, Brenda Luckman came up with this one thing that men all said, is because I couldn't make her happy. Because the default was, I will not be happy, no matter what you do.
Well, actually,
but I want you to keep trying.
Actually, there is a belief system that they bring from childhood, which is it's not okay to be too happy and functional in the world, and they're not aware of it. They don't wake up every morning, you know, saying this as a mantra or anything, but that it's in their wiring. And on the other side, because I don't want to make it seem like it's so dark and hopeless, when they actually start to allow themselves to be like everyone else, they allow themselves to be ordinary, they allow themselves to see that their feelings aren't facts, that they...
Well, this is a big statement you're making here. Here's one of the ones where I wish people could have seen your hands move that one. Their feelings are not facts. F-A-C-T-S, not F-A-X, right? Your feelings are not necessarily the truth. Just because you feel something doesn't make it valid. And that's with the romantic. They are always thinking that their feelings are more important than everything else. You must listen to my feelings. You know, and they say the word feelings as if it has three E's in it. You kind of drag it out. Feelings. Now, not to mock that, because I think that is important that people understand each other's feelings, but also to understand that your feelings may be a reaction at any given moment to hormones, chemistry, coffee, anything else you've done or anything else that you're affected with. Your feelings are not what determines who you are.
Right. Well, I think it was Descartes who said, I think, therefore I am. The romantic is, I feel, therefore I am. Mm-hmm. And that's the way they operate. When they actually do work on themselves and they see that they are not their feelings, they have so much more freedom. They lighten up. they're not so significant, and they realize they're significant.
And there's so much creativity available in the romantic type.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, this is Armand DeMille with Iris First. Iris First is a relationship coach. Happened to be passing by today. We could talk about this forever, you know. Well, there is one more that I would like to address, the nine. The nine in relationship, and we're going to talk about the urge to merge. Talk about the nine in a loving relationship.
Okay, so the nine in a loving relationship, yeah. You said. So the nine in a loving relationship feels safe, feels connected, feels adds peace and harmony to the relationship, is a really incredible partner. Do you want me to tell you about the other side?
Well, let me tell you about this, why I say it. A lot of women I know say they meet people, and then when I listen to it, it sounds like a nine, because the nine always has an issue with anger in some form or other, and you could kind of see it, you know? And they're so good, and they're so giving, and they merge so strongly, and they merge so quickly. They see you one day, and they could be there the next 4 days, and the next 5 days, and they're fully attentive. But the killer of it is, the thing I expect when I meet somebody who says to me that they've just fallen in love, I could expect with this kind of personality, is that since they don't have a right to get angry, since they don't feel the ability to get angry, they express their anger in a passive aggression. And so they always end the relationship with a passive aggressive way. And the way the relationship ends is they say to you, oh, my sister just got in town and I have to go spend time with her. And then they disappear. And so when you get into a relationship with a nine who is being overly romantic and overly bonding, it's good to understand this and be able to pull yourself back a little bit and say, wait a minute, let me pay attention. But I want to hear from all of you. Listen, my friends, I want to hear emails, because this week I'm going to have most of the week off. I'll be paying attention to what you say. I want to hear from the givers. I want to hear from the romantics. I want to hear from you. Send me an email and tell me about your experience. And that's Armand@thepositivemind.com. Iris, you were going to say.
Yes, I was going to say, you asked me before, do I have a romantic child? No, I have a nine peacemaker child. And one of the things that I practiced doing with him since he was younger is asking him a question. He'd give me an answer, and I'd say, is that the truth, your truth, or is that your avoidant answer to avoid the confrontation? I want to know your truth. And for if you're involved with a nine peacemaker, you want to make it really safe for them to speak their truth. And sometimes you might find that you have to draw them out, because what is operating behind the scenes for them is that they're good or okay if everybody around them is good or okay.
So they'll make up their answers to kind of keep you from getting angry.
Keep the peace.
Keep the peace, keep the peace, keep the peace. And then if you're a loving parent, you'll say, is that an answer that's just made up for me? Is there a different one that we might consider as well? And understanding this stuff is really phenomenal. There's a couple of books that I think are really fabulous. The Wisdom of the Enneagram by Don Riso and Russ Hudson teaches a great deal about this. Iris has studied with them as well, right?
Yes, I have.
And Iris First, if you need to reach her, you can reach her through me. Just send me an email and I'll forward it on to her. This is Armand DeMille with you. I'll be back with you Thursday, next Thursday at 1 p.m., bringing you some incredible new stuff. Remember, we need your help down at WBAI as volunteers. So if you want to become a volunteer for BAI, go to 212, dial 212-209-2826, leave your name there, and then go on up during marathon time. Iris, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Armand.
Porque sell money there.